listening to the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. In part two of our introductory series on Ask the Experts, we continue with the question and answer session from the 2011 annual symposium featuring Jeremy Steinberg, Debbie McDonald, Scott Hassler, and Anne Gribbons. We begin with Scott Hassler.
If we have a three-year-old that's grinding the teeth, any suggestions? Yes and no. Yes, in the way that they can learn it as a habit when they're concentrating. It has nothing to do with discomfort in their bodies or something that's being asked too much of. It's a concentration thing. And if you want to, you can use gum bits or something like that that they chew more so they don't learn that habit. So in some cases, I think horses grind because they're concentrating. And other times, you can listen to it if it's really specific and you can correlate and track a consistency. Maybe the horse has some pain. But I'm a fan that I don't really listen that much to the grinding. I think when you pay attention to it, it becomes worse in some cases. I just try to give gum bits and keep going and see what's up sometimes and go through that stage. But again, I don't have a black and white answer on that one.
And to add a judge's point of view, it used to be considered a problem with the grinding of teeth. Whenever you heard it, we finally got smarter. And of course, the trainers know that what Scott just said is very true. A horse can sometimes go better when it's grinding his teeth. That's when he really gets into the work. And usually, it goes away. When the horse is a little tense about one movement, he will do it. And 6 months later, he's comfortable at that movement, and the grinding just stops. But if you let it bother you when you ride, and you get tense because they do it, then they tend to play it against you. So both judges and riders can somewhat ignore it unless, as Scott said, it is you think it's pain related at some specific movement.
No, I totally agree with that. I think a lot of times when you're starting a horse and you're starting to put a little more pressure, a little more intense training, then those kind of things show up for a short period of time. But I agree. A lot of times if you ignore it and go ahead and just go about your business, it usually resolves itself. And there are going to be horses that are just teeth grinders, but that is something that, you know, we hear it. If you ever go to the big shows in Europe, there's a lot of horses that grind their teeth that are doing very well. So it's not something we love, but something that not always can be fixed.
Scott, just as these ones are starting, we had a good question that we got while we were up top, which was, what age and when do you know when to start with the double bridle?
Great question. That would be a fun one with a lot of people around to discuss that, like we have now. I really feel there's not an age. There is a stage. So this may sound a little bit contrary. If I was to take the very, very diplomatic approach and go straight forward, I'd say, you know what, I really like them to do everything in the snaffle really well before a double bridle. In terms of teaching all the basic body work, of collection, lateral work. But there are some horses who really respond beautifully to the double bridle. But like every tool, it's the hands that it's in. It's the hands that it's in. So if I have a very skilled rider and a double bridle is really going to help a late five-year-old coming into six, and the horse goes dramatically better in the double bridle, I don't feel it's an excuse. I feel it helps the horse. I don't want to see a tight curb chain. I don't want to see the use of the curb chain. I want to see that just the pressure points help that horse a lot. I wouldn't be afraid to put it in the late five-year-old. I don't do that often, but I have done it. So again, it's kind of in the stage. I would say for sure towards the late six, early seven-year-old year, I think they should start to learn it if it's a horse who's on a normal track. But I always want to be a little bit careful about to say exactly, I feel good to start it at this age. But I think when a horse is going with nice third-level work, starting fourth level work, and you want to try the double bridle in your horse when it's very mature, I think you have the right to try it.
And you know, in the end, it all comes down to good riding and good horsemanship. And whenever you start fixing the bits and fixing the equipment and changing the saddles and getting with the latest fad on everything, you're probably looking to avoid the real problem, which has to do with your riding.
A really good question, whoever asked it about nose bands. I'm a fan of trying to work from simplicity, and I prefer a regular Cavison noseband with a flash is my noseband of preference. However, from there, I would say I do use drop noseband. Sometimes they look old-fashioned, they don't look good, but I'm not such a fan of looking good. I like a clear purpose. I like a drop noseband on some horses, and for different reasons, not for a specific reason. If they just like the pressure better in the drop noseband for a while, it can just be a pressure point. For example, some young horses, or some horses in general, but young horses, when they're a little bit nervous, they're chewing a lot, and they can get their gums a little bit sore by their teeth, where the normal Cavison can go. A flash is below the bit, it can rest that skin. So sometimes they're steadier just to rest that skin because the teeth are changing in the young horse's mouth. So I vary it quite a bit, but
I want to make sure, which is how the flash is supposed to work, I want the flash on there to help hold the bit still so that there's less ability for him to move the bit around in his mouth and change the contact. The flash is not there on the bridles to actually do anything to keep the horse's mouth closed. The Cavison is supposed to work up high on the jaw to help support a quiet mouth, but not supposed to crank the mouth closed. The flash itself, the drop part of the noseband, is only really there to hold the bit in one place in the horse's mouth. So as we talked about with Ariana with it, she said when you put the flash on, he gets a little bit fussy. And I asked her the other day with it about saying when you take him home next week, I want you to start to think about it and start to work with it, put it on and leave it totally loose. Give him a little padding under there. Let him kind of get comfortable with it because he does have that tendency to be a little bit chompy in his mouth. And it's not that we're going to crank his noseband closed to eliminate it because the more in that way, if we create the wrong kind of tension, he's going to be more funny about the contact, more worried in his mouth.
I think when you have a horse that is a little bit, like you said, a little chomping at the bit, a little active, I think, like you said, it doesn't need to be tight, but the one thing you don't want is the horse to start getting more active as you start to put more pressure on. Then you start to become with, you know, it starts to become more of a habit for the horse to get more active in the mouth. So I think I would recommend a flash too as well. I think it would be beneficial.
And also one question, what would you do with a horse that always moves away from the side you carry the whip, even when it's held properly and only used to reinforce forward?
That's a good one. So you guys heard the question, what do you do with a horse that is always going away from the whip? And this is where you have to think. You have to be creative. You have to bring other thoughts into your work, and you have to be little mad scientists. I read a little bit about the Global Forum this year. I didn't go, but some of the stuff I read about what Kara was saying, and I saw that Buck movie this year. I don't know if you guys seen the Buck Brenneman story. I like him, don't like whatever. But interesting horsemanship. You can learn a lot from different people. It's one of those things. If you have a horse, to me, that's a little bit worried of the whip and is moving away from the whip, and it's not accepting it. So I have to do work on the ground, not on his back, but actually on the ground to go, this whip isn't a huge deal. You can like it. I had a four-year-old, my own horse. She has back problems, so we've retired her. But I did with her as a four-year-old, as a little baby, in a halter. She's terrified of whips. And even we broke her. We didn't do anything to her with her, but scared of the whip. And I did a lot with her in the evenings when I'd hand walk her. And I would just take her in the arena, a pocket full of carrots and sugar. And I took the whip, a long piop whip, and I just petted her, fed her, led her around more, pet her a little more, fed her more, led her around more, and went around for hours. I mean, over months and months in time. She actually learned to do little half steps in a halter, just playing with the whip, and learned to kind of go, okay, the whip is no problem. But I think when something like that comes into play, you have to actually go outside the box just a little bit and go, I need to get him a little bit calmer, quieter, just not thinking that the whip is going to do anything. Sometimes you do end up with one that's terrified of the whip and you've never used it hard on them. They're sensitive. That does happen. But you do have to think, every horse, my thought is that all have to learn to accept a whip because at some point in time you might need it. You have to be able to carry it. So if they do have that reaction, you do want to take the time to get them comfortable with it.
There was a question here about discussed use of the spur to influence the ribs, abs, and hind legs.
So that was a good question. You guys heard it in the audience. Yeah, discussed use of the spur to influence ribs, abs, and hind legs. Perfect. I have a belief. I've never used my spur to make the horse go forward. use my leg. If the horse doesn't respond to my leg, I follow through with the whip. I want my horse sensitized to my leg, so I don't need a spur to make my horse move. That doesn't make sense. I have to have big spurs. I can't make him trot. Well, supposed to be light, and you're supposed to have invisible aids later. So if you use your spur to make him go, that's pretty obvious that you're making him go. But we use the spur to reinforce, the same way the whip reinforces. Here's my leg, I ask you to go. You didn't go, touching you with the whip. Simple. Horses learn that on a lunge line, right? We break them right, as young horses. They know a lunge whip. Say, terut, doesn't trot, you shake the lunge whip out. They learn that. So we get on them when we're breaking them as riders. I don't know, Scott, you can tell me too if it's you don't agree. So we get on them as young horses. They've learned to use the whip. They learn that from the lunge line. So we get on them, we put our helmets on, we're all ready to go, and we ask them to move, and they don't go. We don't have spurs on, which is right. And we start kicking, kick, 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 chasing them around. And we're all scared to touch them with the whip because we think they're going to buck us off. It doesn't make any sense. They have no comprehension of what the leg is supposed to do. They know our voice, and they know the whip. They should be quietly trained to that when they're getting broke. So that shouldn't change. We don't go later, oh, I'm changing the rules now when you're this age so I can do it. So what I say is, the spur reinforces our bending aids. It might reinforce a moment of engagement of a hind leg, because engagement of a hind leg under the horse's belly, as it steps under, the belly moves slightly over away from that leg, which creates bend. The rib cage hollows. The body hollows, sorry. So engagement creates bend. There's other ways we can bend the neck too. That also bends the horse a little bit. But we use the spur to say to him, here's my leg needing you to bend your body. And if you don't bend your body right or move in that way, I'm going to use the spur a little bit to reinforce that. Not send you forward, but take that hind leg and give it more reach up under so the body hollows. Does that make sense? Yeah? So for me, I think spur for bending or engagement. The two are really the same if you're in a bending moment. And the whip for forward.
Yesterday there was a question regarding the lunge line, over the head or under the chin. Someone had asked that question. Personally, I prefer it over the pole. However, if I have a very disobedient horse, there's a clip that's made that attaches to both rings of the bit, and you can attach the lunge line underneath to that. If I have a very disobedient horse, I prefer to put it there to work through some kind of an issue, and then over the pole for nice proper lunging. I think the pole is very sensitive, and if I have a horse who's got resistance issues going on, that the lunging is being used as a training tool to fix a problem, I prefer not to mess with the horse's pole.
Here was one that was sent in today that says, how do you feel about the position of the curb bit in the double bridle? In some, the curb bit was more vertical than in others, making it look like there's a lot more contact. Well, a lot of that depends on the curb chain. If you don't do the curb chain up enough, then the bit rotates more in the mouth and you'll get this look. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the rider is necessarily being that much harder on the curb. It's just the adjustment of where you put the curb chain to how much rotation you get in the bit. So that, I hope that answers that question.
There's a question about bits on four-year-olds. And I think the question was, if I remember how it was stated, is that we see commonly a loose ring snaffle. Is that a bit that's preferred? You know, to be honest, I'm really simple. I try not to get too varying left and right about what's right and what's wrong. I like to start simple. And then from simple, if that's not working, then I start to experiment a bit more. So like when we said about nose bands, a normal cavesson with a flash is where I start. When I start a horse younger than four, when we first back them, I personally prefer a bit that's not a loose ring, because they don't know how to be straight yet. They don't know contact yet, and the bit can pull through their mouths in a loose ring. So until they've learned, a bit that has more of a cheek piece helps them get more stable in the contact. I prefer that in lunging them and starting them under saddle. And then I transfer to a simple loose ring snaffle. And again, from there, I pick up varieties. But there's not a preferred way or a must-be way at all. Again, I think horses are such individuals, we have to explore.
This podcast is also available on iTunes. You can find out more information about the USDF on the website at usdf.org.